Welcome, Chevra, to conference call number 166, the Zeichus Nishmas Arvi Yamenhamer. Rebbe.
Thank you so much. Question one. A caterer asked the following question. When he does an event for 100 people, he generally brings food for minimally 150 people. When food is left after the event, what is the caterer's and what is the Baal Simcha's entitled to take home? It could be relevant to things that are in the kitchen but were not yet served. It could be bottles of wine that were on the buffet but not opened, etc. Well, you know, Hakol Kiminik Amedina. If there's no agreement, they have to follow the custom of that place. And here the Chafetz Chaim is so prescient, where he says in these kinds of situations, the more you write down in the beginning, the better. The contract should say, whatever's left in the kitchen goes to this one, left in what goes out goes to that one. So there shouldn't be any misunderstandings or any grievances at the end of the day. But if they did not write anything, you'd have to inquire what the custom is, and that's what prevails. Two, a woman is redoing her kitchen with granite counters and asks for the ceiling, the countertop surface with a sealant, water, ethanol, and some other chemicals would render the countertop non-kasherable for Pesach. Number one, in my opinion, you don't have to kasher any countertops for Pesach. Why am I saying that? Because typically, one never puts hot food directly on a countertop. It's just not done. So therefore, what you're worried about is that the countertop absorbs some chumas during the year, and now it's going to come out on Pesach. But we have a klal, Ein Ulua Yotzi Mikli L'Kli B'lo Rotev, that it will not go out without a wetness. And the Chavos Das says a wetness means a lot of wetness, not like the Yad Yehuda. We think the Chavos Das is more correct. A puddle. It's almost never going to be a puddle there. Almost never. And if it would be, it's an Einu Ben Yomo, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I want to say that if it does need kashering, it seems to me that it would not be a problem. Why? Because if this sealant works, so nothing can get out, nothing can get in. So it seems to me, again, it may depend if the sealant was put on in the beginning or not, but if the sealant is so strong that the hot water can't get into kasher it, on a simple level, it's never going to go out either to affect the pace of the food. If you would put a piece of a hot matz on top of it, it can't come out because of the sealant. So mamonashach. If the sealant is so strong, it won't come out. If it's not so strong, then the kasher should work. But again, I tell everybody, don't rely on any of this. Just cover the countertop. That's what we do. To cover it solves all the world's problems. Three, someone had a permanent shoe insert and discovered a shoe on Shabbos that became too tight and was hurting his feet. The insert was attached with a long-term adhesive glue and typically stays for 7 months. After it's removed, it's typically thrown out and not reattached. There was an Eruv. Are there any concerns of removing it on Shabbos with respect to Soser, Korea, Tikkun Kli, or anything else about attaching an insert or insole on Shabbos? This is a serious issue. The most troubling is it's called Korea. The Rambam writes that someone who is Madbik Nioros Devukim is over on Tofer, and who separates Nioros Devukim is over on Korea. Now, we have all these other cases where we're lenient. Someone has a Band-Aid, someone has a disposable diaper. In all those cases, it's only meant to be on until you use it. The Mishnah Berurah and Siman Shin Yuzank was the Machlokas, the Tazan Levush, when Mekel Nachayla. It's only meant to be there until the consumer uses the product, whether you're a Band-Aid or a diaper. That's relying upon that. But over here, I understand it was meant to be there forever. It's meant to be there forever, so then if you separate the insert from the shoe, it may be a career problem. I say maybe because there are many who assume Korea only applies to papers, soft, pliant surfaces. A hard surface, such as a shoe, and probably an insert, is also hard. I'm not sure how hard the insert is. It may be not included in the category of Korea whatsoever, but I'm not so sure. I'm not sure how soft the insert is. I'm not sure about this fact. Some disagree with it and say it's Korea even by harder surfaces. So I'm worried about Korea. I'm not so worried about Soser. I'm not so worried about Tikkun Kli, but I am worried about Korea primarily. For that reason, attaching it would also be a problem because of Tofer, Madbig the Yoros. Again, there are some leniencies, but I'm not willing to rely upon them. Question 4. Is there any concern with making early Shabbos this year on Shavuos, first days going into second? In general, are there any solutions for a single man who usually lights candles to make early Shabbos with a plaque-compliant minion? Does it matter if he's eating out and can perhaps chip in with the candle lighting in the home? He's eating. How should he do that? Eating at home? Question mark. There's nothing wrong with making a Yontif early, or Shabbos really early, on the second day of Shavuos. On the contrary, if you look at Magen Avraham, that was accustomed to do it earlier because of the Erev Tav Shilin only works with Hohel, that you can give it to guests. So therefore, you shouldn't do Melachos up to the last minute of Friday. He was accustomed to make Shabbos and Yontif Sheni early. In our shul, we don't do that only because we want to have everyone together for our Yontif davenings. We don't want to split up. We don't have to. But technically speaking, I don't see anything wrong with making an early second day of Shavuos, early Shabbos. The second question is a general problem. The truth I had it myself. Last Shabbos, in other words, 10 days ago, I found myself at home. The Rebbe was in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore I had a chiyuv of hadlakas on Eretz. But I, because it was a simcha in the shul, I had a, you know, they made early Shabbos. So I'm stuck. This is a problem which can to many people. What I did was, I went to Daven Mincha, went back home, but I live across the street, fulfilled the Lukas HaNeiris and came back. And when they had a big chazan at a choir, I didn't miss more than the first one or two chapters of Kabbalah Shabbos, which I was easy to make up. But if a person is further away, and there are some people in my shul who have this problem, it's an issue. If they can go and come back as I did, that'd be the best way to handle it. But if they can't, so they're stuck with a difficult choice. Difficult choice. So I would tell them, if they can go and come back in time for Maariv and miss Kabbalah Shabbos, it would still be worth it to do that. If that's impossible, so you could daven Mincha and go back home and daven Maariv Yechidus. And that seems to be the best solution for such an individual. Or, well, again, he can, if he finds a mincha gedola, then he can have just stay at home until the moment of plaga mincha, do hadlakas haneiros, and then come to shul. Again, every case is somewhat different. As far as the person who is going to someone else's house and wants to give him a penny, or a pruta now is much more than a penny, give him a nickel, and have part of their that mitzvah, I believe it's okay, because even though many authorities maintain that the hadlakas haneiros should be where you're sleeping, but there are enough authorities who say where you're eating, and therefore that would be the way to handle it in such a situation. Eating in your own house, my opinion is, it's dangerous to leave candles unattended. And I would say the best thing to do is to use electric lights. Electric lights, and that's what I did. I came home, I put the electric lights on, flipped three lights off and on in the rooms that I was going to be using over Shabbos, even though I was eating out. And that was my hadlakas haneiros. I made a bracha, hadlakas haneiros Shabbos, and I had in mind not to be mekabel Shabbos, which for men certainly is effective, the halacha. That's what I did. Number five. And on a Shabbaton, and they had a musical Havdalah ceremony. The person being Havdalah played the guitar and sang Havdalah over a microphone, since it was a large room and with hundreds of teenagers there. Is this halakhically acceptable? Is it valid from a chinuch perspective? A couple of rabbis were not happy about it and they made their own Havdalah afterwards. Should I have joined them? The answer is, a microphone is very questionable. It seems that they quote from two of the greatest gedolim that it's okay, Chazanish and Rav Moshe. That's what they quote in their names. But Rav Shlomo Zalman and many, many others disagree. And I thought they were right. Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's not really the voice. It's an electronic amplification of the voice. It's not really the voice itself. And therefore, I would say, you want to play the guitar, that's gavaldik. Nothing wrong with singing Havdalah over the microphone. Gavaldik, that could work for up until the Bar Prayer Goffin, even inclusive, if he's the only one drinking the wine. But once you get past the Bar Prayer Goffin, you get to the Pesumim and the Eish and Beikor Sechol, that should be screamed out by the person as loud as he can. That would be a better solution, if you ask me. Not that many words to scream out. And hopefully everybody will be able to hear. Six. On Shabbos, an adult play with a child with a matchbox car which is rubbed on the ground and springs forward when released from one's grip. In my opinion, the answer is it's mutter. It's not a makab apash. It's not broken. It's Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's opinion in similar situations. Quoted in the Shmir Shabbos Kuchos. Seven. When I go to the bathroom in the middle of davening and took off his talus and tefillin, when he puts them back on, does he make a brach on them? Is there a difference if it's urinary defecated or does he use the urine or a stool in the bathroom room? Interesting. I mentioned Shmir Shabbos. If you look at Perek Aleph, Halacha, Heora, Ayin Tes, he says things have changed from the time of the Gemara. Time of the Gemara, they kept their talus on all day and the tefillin on all day. So it wasn't just strong and powerful, focused intention to keep it on during the davening. So therefore, if it fell down, and maybe if you go to the bathroom, it would require a new bracha. But today, when it's only used for intense short amount of time, even if it fell down, it would not require a new bracha. And it would, I believe that's true even in the case that we went to the bathroom, no matter what kind of bathroom. If you look in the Piskei Tshuvos in Simen Ches, footnote 245, he says something similar. Not identical, but quite similar. So at least misafek, you would not make a bracha. Okay. Now, there's a custom in the yeshiva. This is question number eight. If they wash a cup, there's no such custom to find a filled cup, spill out the water, see sure that there's no problem, it's not messing with the shul's money. There's no problem. There's no reason to spill out that water. The water is 100% fine. Question nine. Someone takes a nap during the day, may he take his stitches off? If yes, or if he took them off for a shower and took a nap afterwards, when he puts them back on, does he make a new bracha? How long is considered hefsek hashkatas? It seems to me, if you take a nap, leave the tzitzis on. Leave the tzitzis on. You take them off. How long is considered a hefsek hashkatas? Look on the Shulchan Aruch Harav, in Simen Ches, 2 or 3 hours. So we believe, since Suffolk brachas, if it's less than 3 hour gap, you would not make a new bracha. Question 10a. A person puts on a pair of tzitzis on Friday morning, knows he will change it to a Shabbos pair. What should he have in mind when he makes the bracha in the morning? Just the first pair, also the second, and does he make a new bracha on the Shabbos pair? B. A person puts on his talus gadol and changes him on his talus katan. He plans on taking a shower on Erev Shabbos and changing his talus katan to his Shabbos pair. On Friday morning, what is the best for him to do? To have in mind only the weekday pair and make a bracha on the Shabbos pair, puts them on, both in mind, and no need for a new bracha. Again, if you look carefully in Piskei Tshuvos, that same Simen Ches, footnote 234, he says that if you put on the tzitzis on Friday morning and you're changing the Shabbos pair, you make a new bracha. Because so many hours have passed between the first bracha and the second talus katan. And talus gadol, right? So once again, he should have in mind, whatever he has in mind, won't even help for later on. In both cases, therefore, they make a new bracha on the Shabbos pair that you put on just before Shabbos, even though you made a bracha on the Talis Gadol in the morning. 11a. On Shabbos, it's preferable not to scoop out ice cream or tuna fish with a scooper, not with a spoon, if one's intention is to make the food look more presentable. Look at the Ramah of 321. Similar question arises if one wants to put frosting on the top of a cake on Shabbos and has dual intentions to spread it all over the top so that everyone has a flavor, also make it look very presentable. B, on Shabbos, it's permissible to serve ice cream on top of a hot and warm piece of pie cake, which will cause it to melt. All good questions. There's no Issa Meruach B'Ochlin. Yes, the Ramah does say that Hamach Mertovol of Bracha. So therefore, it would be better, especially if you want to make a smooth surface, to avoid it. The first question, it seems to me, is double push this mutter. You're allowed to take out ice cream with a scoop or tuna with a scoop. The main point is just to get it out. The fact that it happens to be a shape of a scooper, that doesn't, in my mind, that's not a problem. The third question, I think, is also not a problem, because even though the ice cream is going to melt, it doesn't melt completely. You wouldn't want to have the ice cream turn into milk. It may get a little bit softer, There's no Easter of, this whole Easter of molded or nolded is even the machlokas and machabas makel and then the shin tazayin. It's only the rechumas or ramah. It's only a complete change of state from a pure solid to a pure liquid. I don't think the foams come out in the cans are a problem. Never was a total liquid. Never becomes a total solid. Similarly, with respect to the ice cream, I don't think it's a problem to put the ice cream on the hot warm piece of pie or cake, even though a little bit's going to melt. And it seems that it should be okay. 12. On Shabbos, one allowed to put leftover chicken soup into a container in the freezer. Either molded nola, again, or achana, or anything else, is a halacha different. On Yom Tov, Shmir Shabbos Kulchasa, Perikud Sifhei, says it's not a problem of molded or nola, because the whole issue, again, is so tenuous, and it's maybe limited to water when applied to other liquids. Again, according to Shlomo Zalman, an impeccable source. Hachana is only if you're doing something now, which you could just have easily have done later on. You just want to save time. Here, if you leave it out for such a long period, left Shabbos and get spoiled. So that only is a problem whatsoever. Yontav is the same as Shabbos for us, halacha lemaaseh. I don't view it as nolad. Nolad is a complete change of state. This is not. 13. My new son-in-law has a family admitted that even if he's yotzi with someone else's kiddush or lecha mishli, he will still make his own bracha on bar pregaf and hamotzi before drinking the wine of the chal. Is there a basis for this? He said, if I thought it was not proper minhag, he would easily not say the bracha out loud, confusing other younger family members or guests. Well, not at all. What should I tell him? Listen, bar pregaf and balachash is okay. He has a mind not to be yotzi with the bar pregaf and the mekadesh. It's fine. Of course, you don't want to confuse people, you should just whisper it. But the chal is not so simple. For the most authorities, I believe, it's preferred to be yotzei with the hamotzi of the botzea on the lecha mishnah. You make your own bracha. You're not making a bracha on lecha mishnah. It's only a slice which came from the lecha mishnah. Take a look, for example, in the Mishnah Berurah, Simon Ayin Dalad Reish, Sivkot and Beis. It does exactly that. It is true that the Piskei Tshuva Sif, footnote 73 to 77, quotes, there are disagreeers. Those who say you should even make your own. Hamotzi is, I have many, many guests come to raise money in my house. One of them every year is coming for over 40 years. He makes Hamotzi himself. I always wondered why is he doing that. Mr. Brewer says, Nachon, not to do that. Well, he has his own Shita, and therefore it's a legitimate Shita. The Piskei Tshuva is closer to Shita, but it should be done solidly, not to confuse people. 14. What is the base for the prevalent custom of children not attending a second marriage of a parent? Is any part of the chassid the children can't participate in? Does it make a difference if the parent who is remarrying after the divorce or death of the first spouse? Or if the parent really wants a child to attend? Again, I had the I had this experience myself. After my mother passed away, my father remarried, and he asked me to come to the wedding. So I called up Rabbi Wagner Zatzal, who was from the same part of Europe that my father's family came from, in Galicia. And I asked him what to do. He said the minute there was to go to the wedding, especially if the parents want you to go, the living, surviving parent, or the remarrying parent wants you to come, it's a mitzvah. Now, I don't want to get in a case where there's a divorce and the mother refuses to let you come, then you're in trouble, and then I think you make your own decision. But if the mother passed away, as in my case, my father asked me to come, and the meeting was out in Galicia. It was that way. I went to the wedding. I cried my way through the chuppah, to be honest with you. And I was aware of the fact that a cousin of mine was the same situation when her parent remarried. She told me in her language, my husband, the son-in-law, went to the wedding, and I went to the movies. And she just didn't want to be anywhere near that wedding because of the felt it was, you know, to honor the memory of the deceased parent. Apparently that was a custom in the Hungarian community. So different communities, and you have to follow whatever community you come from. Strictly speaking, it's okay. And the surviving or remarrying parent asks you to come, the default is you should come, unless there's a strong minig in the part of Europe that you came from or a strong objection on the, if there's another live parent, then you have to be more careful in making a decision. 15. Is there any basis of the customer standing up with the chasm and kala as they walk down the aisle? If not, she would still stand up so not to be porish min hatzibur. Interesting. There are different customs over here. Once again, depends upon the meaning. There's a beautiful saying called Nesivus Adam from Matas Deitch from Ramat Shlomo, whom I know quite well. I have his forum. And in his sefer, he says, you know, I looked at the other Rabbanim and what they did, and he found out that, and he starts by saying, it's only an American problem, because in Eretz Yisrael, they stand for the whole chuppah. No one's getting up for anybody. They're up the whole time, as I'm sure you've seen. You've been at Israeli weddings. That is a prevailing custom over there. So it doesn't become an issue. In America, when they sit down, we'll see soon if it's legitimate to sit down, that's when it becomes an issue. So, he said that Yaakov Kamenetsky would stand up and Moshe Feinstein would not stand up. So, you know, these are two of the biggest gadolim in the world, have different customs about this thing, which has become much more popular than now. I'm very surprised that he said Rav Yaakov stood up, because Rav Yaakov passed away 40 years ago. And 40 years ago, I thought no one stood up. When I got married, no one stood up for me. But I think it's a fairly new custom. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad custom. The main reason for the custom is that the concept which comes from the situation of people who were bringing bikurim. And they're bringing bikurim, so the custom was to stand up for osei mitzvah. Based upon Yerushalmi, a little bit of a source, Kiddush Neflam and Gimel. So you understand, the man's on the way to do a mitzvah. So you want to stand up for him? That's what he writes over there in that sefer. That's what he says. Interestingly, in the Berhete, even Simon Samar Vesa Kodin Aleph, he quotes, you have to stand during the entire Sheva Brachos. Of course, in Eretz Yisrael, if you're less than 80 years old, there's no chair for you. Everyone stands up for the entire chuppah from the beginning to the end. There are no chairs. That's how it was in Europe. Look at the old pictures. America's America. What can I say? I wouldn't be surprised if it comes from a non-Jewish source. Everyone sits down and they make a whole ceremony with an aisle. There was never any aisles in Europe. They just, it saves a lot of time in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they have a bedek and they go straight to the chuppah. In America, it takes a half an hour. Someone sits down, da 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 da. But that's, we live in America. We can't change it. What are we going to do? So it seems that even if you have to stand up during the Sheva Brachos, there's no need to stand when the chassan is walking in with his parents down the aisle. Even if you'll say that the reason given, chassan damo le melech. So that savior writes that chassan damo le melech, you only have to stand up for the chassan, not for the kala. I don't want to get involved in that kind of a story. But even if he's a melech, he's only a melech after he gets married. Not a melech before he gets married. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik was opposed to the custom, which also I never heard of until recently, that the chassan goes out the cross column. He leaves the chuppah and goes towards the girl, towards his wife, towards his column. My Rebbe said it comes from the goyim. That's why I try to tell people not to do it. What do you mean? Chazav an expression. Kechosn yosu the kras kala. So my Rebbe said, he's not a chosn, she's not a kala, didn't get married yet. So same thing for that reason. If you want to stand at all, you should stand for the Sheva Brachos. That's quoted in the Berhetev. But to stand when they're marching down is not necessary at all. That's what Rav Moshe did, and he certainly can rely upon him. If everyone else is standing, you want to give a little shake. Now you're not ignoring them, but to stand for the whole time that they're peering and squinting as they're coming down, I don't think it's a requirement. Again, we don't want to be parish with a tzibur too much, but not every single person stands up usually. So, the ones in the minority sitting down, you can join that minority. 16. Is it permissible to poke out the holes in a floating wick so as to be able to insert the wick on Bel Yom Tosheni, or must one prepare it in advance? That's a very, very good question. I had to see in my house what this whole floating wick looks like. And the question, of course, why didn't they, when they manufactured it, why didn't they make a hole? The whole point is to have a hole. I saw that most of the floating wicks that I saw had holes. The factory made holes. And I'm not sure if those that didn't, was it on purpose or just that, like sometimes you have a situation where you have a book and they separate all the pages of the book, and then when they bind it, it goes back together again. That's not considered to be a korea because it wasn't done on purpose. It just happened that way. I'm not sure if they purposely left it in. Why would they do that? I don't know. So if indeed, when they made it, their intention was that they put the wick in to make a hole, it seems to me that that's how they make it. It's not a broken floating wick. That's how you make a floating wick. And then you just use it by putting the wick in. But I don't think it's called the Makabe Patish. It's not broken. But again, most of the wicks that I saw it was already a hole from the factory. If you want to be a Machmir, so just put the wick in before Yontif. It can't hurt, but I don't think Mikra then it's required. 17. On Shabbos, can one take medium rare meat out of the refrigerator and place it on the Israeli plata or in a warming drawer, totally separate from the oven and only used to warm up food? Oh, only used to warm up food. Why do you mention medium rare? My fear is they want to make it from medium rare to plain medium. Now, that's a serious halakha question. Is that called bishul or not bishul? Now, according to the Rashba, that it's sufficient to have a machal ben rusoi, for sure there's no problem with bishul. According to the Rambam, that requires a special cold soko, it's hard to know how you define cold soko. Medium rare meat. Now, I assume that there are many times, I don't know how to define them. I assume it's rare, it's medium rare, there's medium, and then, I don't know, well done, or medium well done. I don't know there are five categories. It's hard to know which of the categories is called Mavushal Kol Sarko. I don't know enough about the frequency that people like their meat medium rare. If most people like it that way, I would say it's Mavushal Kol Sarko. Even though you can make it even more cooked, there would not be a violation of Bishul. And I'm not sure. So I'm not sure. I have two problems. My fear is, since the question is limited to medium rare, that the intention of the person is to make it more cooked, which could, in theory, be nisa d'oraisa of mevashel, according to the Rambam, which bothers me much more than anything else. If your intention is not to cook it more. Just heat it up. Then one can argue this is considered to be Mavusha called Sarko, and therefore there's no problem whatsoever. But the way the question is phrased, it's you totally separate from the oven and only used to warm up food. What about in this case? So why are you mentioning medium rare? What if it's well done? It's the same thing. So I have a sneaking suspicion that they want to cook it more. That's a serious problem. Not only is it a serious problem, the guy may be overneath the derisa, but it also ruins the effectiveness of your plata or warm major in other situations. The only reason we can be makel by platas is because not nirekim mevashim, because no one cooks on it. Yeah, but if you're cooking on it, he's ruined it for us. So therefore, I do not recommend this. 18. A storage shed has two doors which open out and close on the doorposts, making it impossible to put a mezuzah in the doorway where it normally would. Where is it better to put it? On the inside or the outside of the shed? So if there's the ability to put it on the post itself, in or out, it's better to put it on out. 19. A college student works an OL run home on Shabbat. A resident has significant developmental and physical disabilities, including being blind, but the resident enjoys music from a battery-powered radio she carries with her. If she doesn't have the radio, she becomes agitated and upset, but there's no apparent threat to her health. Occasionally, the resident drops the radio and the batteries pop out. The resident is not capable of reinserting the batteries herself, and in general, the staff on Shabbat are all Jewish. The student asks about reinserting the batteries on Shabbat. I have suggested to the student to secure the battery compartments with tape, secure the battery compartment with tape before Shabbat. If the batteries did pop out, would the student have any head to put the batteries back in with a shinui? In my opinion, with a shinui, it's okay. Why do I say that? Because according to the Alter Rebbe and the Eglei Tal, you're allowed to do even a malacha, the oraisa, Peshinui for Chola Shebo Sakana. So Kavachomer, here where I don't think there's any derisive involved, Ashini would work, even according to the Mechava, Ashini would work, I presume it's the Rabbon. 20. In footnote 30 of the Dirish, Mr. Brewer for Simon 131, Hilchos Nefilas Apayim, and quotes from Shlomo Zalman Arbach, to allow the skipping of Tachlum and davening in the hall for a Sudas Bar Mitzvah. Look in Halichos Shlomo, which is cited. Chazabar says, Vadai Zman Simchol. It's a sock commonly found in the U.S. Would nafkaminas be if the seam is taking place or the suit is taking place, Boba Yom or Bar Mitzvah, with one extended to suit that's Bas Mitzvah, to Boba Yom? How do we understand Siman Simcha? I don't understand the whole thing. When we grew up, a Bar Mitzvah, Bas Mitzvah, was no excuse not to say Tachlum. The only time we didn't say Tachlum, there was a chosen in the room. Any other suda, you should say Tachlum. That's a meaning in America. I imagine if somebody follows from Shlomo Zalman even in this country, but I believe that the prevailing custom that Tachlin should be said. Question number 21. I'm not going to talk about the coin guttle. 22, final question. A member asked for how's a family save a Torah on Shul's Urim. Should the Shul host save a Torah with all its pump, or is it sufficient merely to place in the Urim and not as it's not the Shul Torah? Let me tell you that their pump for many, many Svarim that are not the Shul's Torah belong to the person that's on loan to Shul. There's nothing wrong with that. If it's trucks with the music, Gavaldik, you want to do it, there's nothing wrong. You know, Shul is in the ownership of the person who is sponsoring it. I have no problem with that. On the other hand, it's certainly sufficient to place in the Aron, even if it is the Shul's Torah. This whole business with the trucks, with the music, is not found in Shulchan Aruch anywhere. It's expensive, and you know, maybe people enjoy it. It's not a halachic requirement. And Chazal tell us, "Ein the chayofim and atzniyus." So if you ask me, I would try to make a smaller event. We've had that in our shul. Some family very tsnuyim. There was no trucks, no parades, nothing. Just they put the Sefer Torah down in the bimo, said a few words, and he said a perek tillim, and put it into the Sefer, into the Aron Kodesh. That is a very appropriate way to fulfill this idea of Haknas Sefer Torah. But again, there's nothing halachically prohibited with doing it in a different way. We'll stop here.
Okay, thank you, Ravi. In 2 weeks is the day before Erev Shavuos. We can do that?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Ravi.